Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 65 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I talked to Greg Rempe from the Barbecue Central show, which if you don't know about it, you should definitely check it out. It airs on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Facebook Live, as well as many other platforms, and you could search them out. If you Google them, I'll put links all below, but you can find them on YouTube and everywhere else and podcasts. And he's been doing this for so long. He gets amazing guests. I've been friends with him for a long time, and I've always wanted to interview him because I'm curious about his background. He's always interviewing other people, but I wanted to put him on the other side and give everyone a chance to know his history, his background, how he started up the show, how he does the show, his mindset, and what he's trying to give the listeners and viewers. And it's fascinating. He currently lives in Cleveland, Ohio, and he knows all about the Cleveland barbecue scene, so we kind of delve into that at the end. But I can't thank Greg enough for taking the time. If you're liking these, please subscribe. That way you can get all the back episodes. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. But enjoy this. Good evening, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Ah, thank you so much I'm glad we finally got this together. Yeah, I know it's been too long, and you've been someone I've been kind of chasing because for a lot of reasons. I love your show, and I love what you're doing, and I love your passion for barbecue. But I also wanted to kind of give people some background as to how you got to where you are today. What did you grow up? Where did you grow up?
I was born and raised upstate New York. Mark Twain's hometown was my birthplace, Elmira, New York, if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, from when I started recollecting, we moved to Saratoga Springs, New York, which is home of the oldest thoroughbred racing track in the country. And that spawned my love of the ponies ever since. And then it was like sixth grade. We moved to Cleveland. I stayed here ever since. My parents took a transfer down to Sarasota, Florida in 97. And that's kind of the long and short of where I was born and where I'm currently at.
And so did you, was there a history of barbecue in your family? Were you guys grilling all the time, or did this happen later? This must have happened later. You're shaking your head. So it happened later?
Yeah, totally later. I mean, my dad was the griller, but there was no a semblance of anything Southern style barbecue, low and slow, nothing that we kind of come to know and love today for what we do and the people that we talk to. Burgers, dogs, steaks, occasionally grilled ribs, which I thought were really good until I learned all about it. So
isn't that the truth?
Yeah. I mean, the whole essence of my journey into barbecue, or the genesis, was from my cousin Glenn, who was a barbecue caterer. And after I had married my wife, we moved into our first house. She got me this Kenmore gas grill that I barely cooked through the back of inside of a year and a half, because we used it all the time. And it wasn't overly expensive. I didn't know anything about anything other than it had three racks and it could house a lot of food. And I thought that looked pretty cool, but it wasn't overly great piece of equipment. I'm sure Max Good would give it like a bronze medal at best on his reviews.
Probably. Yeah.
So I went through the back of it and I was getting ready to buy another cooker or another grill. And it was going to be that $1,200 stainless steel Gen Air that was really popular back like in 2005 or whatever it was. And I was ready to pull the trigger. And my cousin Glenn got a hold of me and he said, "Hey, have you ever thought about getting a barbecue pit and a grill?" And I said, "Oh, what's a barbecue pit?" And so he was doing a part-time barbecue catering at the time in Maryland,
okay,
aside from his day sales job, and was like, "Oh, well." So he went through the whole deal and said, "You could probably get a decent starter barbecue pit like Weber Smoky Mountain or a Brinkman Smokin' Pro, and then also get a decent grill. Maybe save yourself some money overall. And now you got two different ways you can cook. You can learn a whole different method with barbecue. You can tinder."
Great advice. That was great.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I use when people ask me all about it. But he's the singular person that is responsible for Barbecue Central today.
The impetus. That's it.
At all the time, he refuses to say that, you know, he could plant a flag and say, "I'm the guy that created Greg Rempe."
But, no, but he definitely did.
Sure is. Absolutely. 100%.
And so as you were grilling and as you were doing this, were you going to competitions or were you seeking out information like online? There weren't a lot of resources online at the time.
No, it was 2005, 2004 maybe. So my wife had gotten me my very first barbecue pit, which ended up being that Weber Smoky Mountain that we had just talked about.
That was my first one too.
I read the directions, fired up that chimney full of charcoal, dumped it in, put on the rack of ribs. And what ended up happening was me trying to chase down temperature for 5 or 6 hours. The ribs were horrifically average at best.
Yes.
And I was like, man, this might make a really good flower pot. I became very disenchanted with it. But then instead of just tossing it, I got online at the time and found the virtualweberbullet.com, which was solely dedicated to that cooker.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my foray into online barbecuing and making connections with people through message boards, which at the time was fairly happening.
Was that like Barbecue Brethren, or who was around? I'm trying to think.
Brethren was around. Texas Barbecue Rub Forum was around. The Texas Barbecue Forum was around. And I was heavy onto Virtual Weber Bullet because that was the only cooker that I had, and was kind of generating some friendships with those people online. Learning a lot about the cooker, that's where I learned the Minion Method. Jim Minion, who's the creator of the Minion Method, was traveling that forum along with some other ones and said, hey, you should start your cooker like this. They named it after me, blah, blah, blah. And as soon as I learned the Minion Method, the Water Smoky Mountain was easy to use. I was generating great barbecue, long burn time. I mean, you know the whole deal, right? Mm-hmm. So it's easier to control temperature on the way up than it is to start hot and bring it back down.
For sure.
And that was a game changer. So, you know, everybody, if you don't know who Jim Minion is, like you should thank him if you use charcoal cooking, because I guarantee that's the way you're doing it in some form or fashion. And he was using, not to get off track, but using.
This is great. No, I'm going to put a link to this because I remember that for sure.
Yeah. So he was using caribou to pork and Wagyu briskets back then, before it got really cool to use, like 5 years ago. He was using it all. He was doing high-end barbecue catering with him and a partner. It was Two Loose Screws Barbecue out of like Seattle, Washington, or somewhere in the West. And using close cookers, close is certainly legend in the pit making business. But, you know, he was using all the cool stuff way before it was in vogue, or it was like the standard now. I mean, competitions, a lot of that stuff is standard. So, I guess I had over participated a little bit in Virtual Weber Bullet. I was asked to lessen my participation.
Really?
Costing the owner of the site too much money or something like that. And I was like, man.
Are you too much bandwidth or something?
I guess. But I was like, this is a message board, man. I want to ask questions. I want to engage. I'm kind of a personable guy. And this is kind of what I want to do. So I was like, you know what, man? F you. I'm going to start my own forum. So I started on like a myfreebulletinboard.com/whatever name I had picked out. And that's where my forum started. So my whole thing started as a forum.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that was good. I'm glad I was going to ask you that. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it was called BBQ-4-letter U, Barbecue for You. That was the first name of me. And it was an online forum. And I was poaching people off of Virtual Weber Bullet. I was asking people from Barbecue Brethren to come over, like the big shots in the forum world at the time. That sounds so weird to say. And said, hey, I'm starting a forum. Can you come over?
No, but it's a real thing. It's so funny. That's real.
Yeah. Absolutely a real thing. Yeah. So then it just kind of grew. And then it was organic. And it became one of the more heavily trafficked barbecue and grilling forums out there on the internet at the time.
And I visited it too. I didn't know that was you.
Yeah, that was me. Okay. So one night, like right before the end of the year, I got a phone call from a guy. He's like, hey, I own the trademark for BBQ for You, and you have to change the name of your website or I'm going to sue you.
Love it. That's a great email to get. Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, no, it was the phone call out of the blue one night. So, and I told the guy to F off and I hung up on him. And then he called me immediately back and he's like, hey, this is no joke. This is why. And he sent me all these emails and showed that he owned it. And I'm like, oh. So I had consulted one of my forum members who happened to be an attorney in Alaska and said, hey, Griff, should I make good with this guy and change the name? Should I just tell him, hey, if you want to take me to court, go ahead and take me to court or whatever? And he's like, you know, if you're not too into the name at this point, change it. You don't have to worry about this guy anymore. I'll drop some paperwork, blah, blah, blah. And so I switched out of Barbecue for You into Barbecue Central, and that's where it's been ever since.
Oh, Oh, that's so interesting. Oh, that's and so now with that forum, when did you decide to parlay that into a show at all, into the rate? Because it started out more as it was. It's because you have a kind of a hybrid, or it's like a, your own Greg Rempe version of what you're doing. It's all new stuff. And what you're still doing is something that's different than other people, which I love.
So the forum at that point, there were a lot of other competing barbecue forums and grilling forums. And I was trying to, being a sales guy by profession, I'm always trying to figure out a way to differentiate. So it's applying the same mindset to the forum. I just started hearing about podcasting. I think Ray Basso from the Barbecue Forum had just started doing podcasting, and they sucked really bad. And I was like, oh, I got to be able to do better than that. They sounded like crap. I could sound better than that. And so I found some stuff on the internet on how to kind of start a podcast. Mine didn't sound really good at all. Like the first dozen I have are under lock and key somewhere. And I refuse to release them because I go back periodically and listen. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe somebody even spent 6 seconds listening to this horrificness that is going across the internet.
No, we are dying for this. This is something we needed.
No, that will never. Yeah, I mean.
No, not that. I'm saying just in general, like that's why it doesn't matter. It almost didn't. Yeah.
For sure. So that's why I started the podcast. And it was all recorded at first for the first couple of years. So I would get in touch with Kevin. We would have this long form interview, and then I would take the best 20 to 30 minutes out of that long form interview and edit it and then upload it once a week. And that was the Barbecue Central show as it originally started. Okay. And then a bunch of barbecue podcasts started sprouting up. So I was looking to once again set myself apart and wanted to do something live. I had realized that at some point after I had left college and gotten through truck sales and all this stuff, that I had some inkling to get into some kind of broadcast medium, I guess, or just to satisfy a need that I guess was out there or that I found that I had. And so I said, well, I should do something live. Didn't want to do radio, internet radio, that term internet radio, which I think is totally gone at this point. But that was super popular. There was a lot of platforms out there. And I found this guy in L.A., Sam Hassan from, at that point, BBS Talk Radio, which is now LA Talk Radio and is wildly successful in that environment. And he was looking for hosts, and it was on Craigslist, and it said, looking for a host for my internet radio station. So I dropped the guy an email. He called me back, and he's like, hey, you know, I'm looking for hosts, so I'm happy to give you an hour. Can you talk for an hour about barbecue? And I said, well, I've been doing a podcast for 2 years about it, and I've got a lot of connections, and I can easily do an hour once a week. No problem. And it was actually like 50 minutes. And he's like, well, okay, but you know, we're probably going to be done in about 6 months when you have nothing else to talk about. And I said, okay, well, we'll see who's right.
Exactly.
And so he put me on, and I was there for years, so much so that eventually I realized that 50 minutes wasn't enough to get through. And that's when I added the quote unquote after dark segment, which was just kind of a run of time that had no endpoint. And then quickly realized that, you know, well, I could just add on a second hour and make it a 2 hour show. And that's kind of what it is. So to answer your question in a long winded way, it is a hybrid. So you hear podcast, and to me, a podcast is something that is pre-recorded. You have a designated release time once a week, once every other week, once a month, whatever that is, but it's all pre-recorded stuff, or maybe you did it live somewhere and you've edited it. But those things are always happening to me in a podcast, and then it's released. People subscribe to your show, you download it on your device, or you get it on a computer or email subscription or whatever, and then you consume it that way. My show is live Tuesday nights from 9 to 11. You go to my website, you go to my Facebook Live page, you go
I'll put links all, yeah.
However you get to my site on Tuesdays, you can hear a live show from 9 to 11. So whatever you're hearing between those hours is actually happening right then and there. It's not a podcast at that point. Now, I am recording all of the audio. I'm recording all the video. Facebook is recording all that stuff. So if you miss it, because who am I to sit here and think that people are, you know, marking the calendar to go race home on any given Tuesday between 9 and 11 Eastern?
I've done it, though.
Well, I appreciate it. That's why I like you the most, Kevin. And
the most.
The most. So if you don't get it, you still have the opportunity to go to all those platforms through podcasts and subscribe to the show so you never miss it. And this year I tinkered with the release on that. So it used to be just a 2 hour dump on a Wednesday. And at the beginning of the year, I decided that I would make the first hour released on Wednesday and then the second hour released on Thursday. And then we've also this year instituted a best moments of the Barbecue Central show in 10 minutes or less. That is the most podcast part of my feed at this point, because that is 100% pre-produced and uploaded at a specific time on Friday.
Now, how much of is this are you, because you do have a day job. So are you also editing at night, or like, or how is this taken?
Here he is. Here's the team.
That's what I'm assuming. Yes.
You know, it's a lot of just whatever free time I would have normally. I use prepping for the show, booking guests, editing audio. Now, the Friday best of show, I do not do. I've provided that content years and years and years ago, but I do contract a guy by the name of John Solberg who actually produces that show. So he'll go back and listen to a show from 8 years ago or 9 years ago and say, hey, these two guests on that show were really enthralling or said something interesting. So out of that 20 or 30 minute interview, he'll pull 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there. And then it's two segments, so 20 minute long show, but both segments are 10 minutes or less a piece. So it gives you a little bit of refresh, or maybe you forgot that you liked that guest, and I give you the link to go back and listen to the full show and the show notes, all that stuff. So John does that. I contract him. And but, you know, aside from other show prep stuff, I mean, it's all me. I'm searching down clips, booking the guests, prepping questions and outlines and doing sound checks. And during the show, I connect with all of them and disconnect with all of them. So it's,
I've done it before, and it was. it's impressive. It feels like a radio show, like you're on with a team at CBS or something. It does feel like that. And also, I've got a question now, I don't want to sound strange, but your voice, did your voice change over the years? Like it's, you enunciate really well and it's very clear. And is that how you've always been?
Yeah, I guess I never went to any broadcasting school. I never knew I wanted to talk, period, other than to make a living. And I think some of the voice has to do with this thing. And then I have some processing, like limiters and gates and compressors and stuff like that.
Okay.
So there is, you know, the $350 microphone that sounds really good. And if we were talking in person, I probably wouldn't sound as dynamic as I do. my highs and my mids and lows are jacked a little bit. Okay. So I don't have this kind of a voice all the time. But, you know, you run into a lot of radio guys. And unless they were like the old timey guys that just walked around like that all the time, they don't sound like, I sound mostly like this. But the enunciation and stuff, yeah, I mean, I work really hard at being able to sound proficient at the English language, that I don't use ums and ahs very much. I'll take pauses to try and find the word instead of filling an empty space, half a second or a second. No big deal when you're actually.
But that's great. Like, that's great advice, though. That's great advice for people that are. There's a lot of people watching these that want to do this. They aspire to have some sort of show on some subject, be it barbecue or anything else.
If you're driving down the road, and I'm driving down the road, and you pass my car, inevitably you will see somebody in a car just talking, and that's all I do. I'll sit there when I'm not listening to the Howard Stern show. I will sit there and have full blown conversations with myself, just to talk, so I can say the right words, so I don't stumble, and it's just practice. It's like anything else. I mean, it sounds weird, but if you want to talk well, you got to talk a lot to make sure that you can hear where you think you're going to screw up and take your time to find the right words. And
especially doing a live show, you're doing a live show, so you want to.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it terrible when you have on the radio a guy that can't spin sentences together, or he uses the wrong word? Now, guilty is charged, and my buddy John Dawson from Patio Daddy-O Barbecue will call me out as the show is happening.
Which I love those little.
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh, that is not a word. That's a rempeism." And I just, you know, will add it to the tally of words that I've made up. But off the cuff, sometimes you run into words that you make up, and sometimes they're really good.
Is your show an homage to any of the old radio shows? Because you do use sound effects. There's certain things that you use that harken back to an older time. It's not something that people do all the time.
Not older radio shows, but I would say my biggest influences would be Howard Stern, Jim Rome. There's a local sports guy here in Cleveland called Tony Rizzo that nobody's going to know.
He used to be in LA for a bit, like for a flash.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So those are probably like my biggest influences as it comes to radio.
Okay.
And hearing how their shows work, sound effect drops. And I get a lot of email that says the worst part of my show is the sound effects, and that I play, you know, an hour and 45 minutes worth of sound effects. I mean,
they like to complain.
Like, I don't know what to say, right? And it's part of the show. I like them.
It's your style.
I like doing it. Yeah. So you either get used to it or you find somebody else that doesn't have them, I guess. But those are my biggest shapers as it relates to broadcasting or shows that I would listen to that I kind of knowingly or unknowingly model after.
And amazing shows to aspire to, too. That's those.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, like the best. You just named some of the best ever.
Right.
So now, how did you now? What is the Barbecue Central show now? Is there a specific structure? I know that you have monthly guests. So who's on the dock? I know Ray Lampe, Meathead. I'm trying to think. Steve Raiklin.
Yep.
I'm missing a lot, but okay. So how does that go? Yeah.
First Tuesday of the month, first Tuesday of the month, Dr. Barbecue, Ray Lampe. Second Tuesday of the month, Meathead for a full hour. Okay. Third Tuesday of the month, Stephen Reichlin. And fourth Tuesday is the Barbecue Central Show embedded correspondence segment, which is in the second hour of the show. And per quarter, or once a quarter, I have Daniel Vaughn from Texas Monthly, Max Good from AmazingRibs.com to go over grills and stuff. And then periodically, Robin Lindars, the Grill Girl, Ted Reeder, Sam Zion, Sam the Cooking Guy out in California. Those guys kind of sprinkle in. And then from there, it's just what's happened over the course of the week. Maybe there was a big competition. You know, originally the show was maybe unfairly pigeonholed as a competition barbecue show with some sprinklings of backyard stuff. And over the years, I've tried to unknowingly at first, but especially knowingly over the last couple of years, steer away from competition barbecue. There's a lot of infighting, and I don't know how much popularity there is there, right now, or it's kind of died off a little bit, at least in my opinion. So I've tried to gear the show more towards the backyard guy and gal or the weekend warrior, and then get the big majors included as well. So Memphis and May winner, I'm going to have them on the show, or American Royal and Jack Daniels and all that stuff I'll have on the show. But I'm not going out of my way to find Timmy's barbecue team who just had their second tournament and they happened to win.
Best in ribs or something.
And I would rather talk business or about a new cooker that's coming out or whatever the new trend is in the backyard and stuff like that. So that's kind of how the show has evolved over the last 11 years, I guess, since I've been doing it live.
Well, and you get all the heavy hitters. It seems like there'll be a subject or something will come up, or even, I guess, I don't know if the Anthony Bourdain and Daniel Vaughn thing, it just happened to be his quarter that he was coming in, but that was like the day before or 2 days before.
Yeah. It was only a couple of days removed and he was set to come on. And I remember hearing that Anthony Bourdain had passed away, and I immediately reached out to Daniel and I said, hey, I know, regular guests I'll contact through the course of the month and say, we'll have like a shareable Google documents and I'll generate an outline of things that are happening, and maybe they stay relevant over that time before we get to it again, or maybe they don't. And there's kind of a free exchange of ideas of how we kind of want to take the segment. I don't, for a non-regular guest, if I have you, like I'm having, I don't know how timely this is going to be by the time this airs, but I have Nick Solaris coming on the show tomorrow night.
Okay.
I've never interviewed him before. I did watch your interview with him and I thought that was really good.
Oh, cool.
But I gave him some topical potential ideas of where we might go, but I don't want to give him a list of 10 or 15 questions, just like I don't want to give that list with anybody I haven't interviewed before, because I don't want them to prepare just for that.
For sure.
Because inevitably, especially with me, if we're doing an interview, you're going to say something and that's going to spark something in my head and I'm going to want to take a left turn.
Same.
And maybe find a rabbit hole and then dig all the way down until we figure out, okay, let's go back to that outline we were going. And if you're not ready for that, you'd be like, ooh, I thought we were going to talk about this instead. So I want to give them some idea, but I also want to have the flexibility of going left or right, depending on how that interview was going. But for the people that are booked each month or each quarter, we like to have a working outline of how we're going to take it. And so I had reached out to Daniel. I said, hey, I know this is kind of where we're at. This is what we're going to lead with. But there's no doubt I'm going to be leading with your thoughts on Tony taking his life and the impact that he had on you and getting the Texas Monthly and all that stuff. Yeah, and he was totally down with it. So
yeah, and he was so forthcoming, and it was poignant, and you could tell how much it meant to him, and especially the lead up, like seeing his different social media posts about the whole subject, and it's like that. Yeah, that happens perfectly, but it does also with like someone like Nick or someone who you talk to. They're so passionate about food or passionate about barbecue that they can talk forever, and you can kind of wind the road like accordingly. So What I want to know, so what should people know about your show that they might not know? Like, what, I know we've kind of discussed things that kind of differentiate, but what should they know if they're tuning in for an hour? What are they going to get?
You're going to get, I call the show the ESPN of the live fire cooking industry. So if you just see Barbecue Central show, you might think, and I get asked all the time, oh, so you cook on your show? I don't cook on my show. It's not a cooking show. I'm not going to give you recipes. I'm not Bobby Flay or Guy Fieri or anything like that. I'm like the Dan Patrick of the live fire cooking.
That's great.
So if you tune in for 1 hour, you might get an interview with a competitor who just won a major event. You might get an interview with somebody that is doing a bang up job in marketing their rubs and sauces. And so we'll learn about their products, but we'll also learn about how they brought them to market and the pitfalls that they ran across while they were getting that stuff to market. So maybe you don't have to, because you're also thinking about bringing your stuff to market.
Oh yeah.
We'll talk to the pit manufacturers. We'll talk to cookbook authors. We'll talk to the Live Fire Barbecue and Grilling bloggers. I try and touch on all portions of the industry. And sometimes it might seem like we'll run a bunch of weeks in similar topics. Other weeks, it's a hodgepodge of what I can book and what's topical, but it's rare that you'll hear the same show twice back to back, unless it's a topic that requires to be visited for weeks in a row, like, certain things like me getting in the Barbecue Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
Revisit it every year.
Oh yeah, should be every week. But but also too, which I think it would be well deserved. But I think it's interesting because the barbecue world has changed so much since you started, and it's a completely different place. And there's also a lot of personalities that did not exist, or they existed as humans, but they didn't exist within this barbecue world, which I think is. And so I'm sure that 5 years from now, your show will completely be different. Not completely, but there'll be a different version of it because of who knows where it's going.
There's a different version of the show that's existing now than existed 5 and 6 years ago when I was doing the Barbecue Central Show podcast, and I was doing my very first round of barbecue roundtables. We were doing a brisket roundtable. I had Ed Moran, the creator of the Fast Eddie brand of cookers. I had Dr. Barbecue. I had Leanne Whippin from Wood Chicks Barbecue at the time. I don't know what she's up to now.
I think she's doing something in Chicago now, I think. I don't know.
She was in, I don't know if she's still in Chicago.
That's true. She might not be. Yeah.
She was with one Chicago barbecue thing, and I think she left there. Maybe she's doing some other thing in Chicago too. Yeah. But she was in there, and then that Jim Minion guy that I'd mentioned, he was also in there. And nobody except Jim was injecting. Nobody was using Wagyu beef except for Jim, but only on catering occasions. And then fast forward to that first season of Barbecue Pitmasters that everybody hates, but really everybody seemed to love after.
But everyone watched it.
Worked out. And you see Wagyu brisket on the TV, and then all of a sudden everybody started using it. So, I mean, that was a huge evolution. Going from low and slow to the majority of competition guys running hot and fast now. So in that 375 to 400 degrees or more, that was not happening when my show started. It was, more of that low and slow stuff. So, and then the cookers, like nobody was really using those upright vertical drums like Pit Barrel Cooker and the Ugly Drum Smoker and Gateway. And those are becoming a lot more popular. The prevalence of the automatic pit temperature control devices like Barbecue Guru and some of the other things weren't nearly as prevalent as they are now. I mean, they're building cookers that have adapters to accommodate those things.
Yeah,
I mean,
which
that
was crazy.
Not,
yeah.
Not the norm back then. You had to figure out a way to get that piece on your own. And I'm not handy, so I was always scared of drilling into anything. And Yeah, I mean, 5 years from now, who knows what's going to happen? I would like to see the flavor profile in competition barbecue loosen up a little bit.
That would be nice. So
I mean, it's so expensive to do now. People are afraid to get outside the box, and you don't want to spend $1,200 or $1,300 on a competition, get outside the box knowing you're going to get hosed. You'd like to be rewarded for something that somebody isn't doing, but I just don't think that that is happening at this point. And I don't know when that's going to happen, to be honest, or if it's going to happen.
I don't know if it will. It seems like, well, it's, I don't know. The people I talk to, they feel, it's a strange little society and world that's going on there that I think they're kind of sticking to their guns.
I think World Food Championships has a great opportunity to change that if they want to. They've aced KCBS out of their barbecue judging portion for World Food Championships this year. They're going to do IBCA, and then they're also doing their own EAT methodology, which I'm surprised they just didn't do that at the start of last year. But KCBS is out for World Food Championships as far as sanctioning, and IBCA and EAT are in. So we'll see if that doesn't end up taking on a life of its own. Who knows?
Well, excellent. What do you cook at home? Like, what's your go-to? What are you looking? What do you crave the most? And what do you get a chance to cook?
I like ribs. My favorite thing is pork ribs. The biggest request that I get if we're having a party is pork butts. This was going to be what I nicknamed the summer of brisket, where I was really going to hone my brisket skills. I was going to cook one a week because my youngest daughter decided at the end of last summer she wasn't going to play softball. My oldest daughter stopped playing softball altogether. My middle daughter doesn't really play sports. She just looks pretty. And you don't have to play sports to do that. So I was going to have all this newfound time on my hands, which I haven't had for 6 or 7 years, chasing around, you know, east of the Mississippi, going to all these softball and volleyball tournaments. And lo and behold, the youngest one decided that indeed softball was still in the plans. And that kind of screwed up the summer of brisket, more or less, at least for this year. So I would really like to cook more brisket to get better. I think I'm an average brisket cook at best. Cook a really great rack of ribs, chicken of all different pieces, parts, or holes. I like steak, the traditional grilling stuff. I mean, it's all fair game. Nothing hugely exotic. I don't do fish gills or lamb testicles or anything like that.
You don't do lamb testicles anymore? I thought you were really considering that.
No, I mean, you know me. I'm ready to fire up a horse porterhouse when given the opportunity legally, but that doesn't seem to be.
I've seen that horse thread that's been going. Yeah, I
mean, horse meat 2018. Let's get on board, right?
Isn't that a big thing in Sicily? Or
it seems to be a big thing everywhere except the United States.
Okay,
I'm not sure. I don't want to get on the whole thing here because everybody's probably bored with it if they're watching and they know me. But it's amazing to me that if we're on a farm, Kevin, and we run a picket fence right down the middle of the farm. On one side are cats, dogs, and horses, and everything else is on the other side of the fence. How is the horse not over? Everything else is on this side of the fence. You name it. Rats, raccoons, squirrels.
True.
You name everything else, but the cat, the dog, which I get. I mean, those are domesticated animals. I don't know how the horse is over there.
And not many horses are living inside of people's houses. Maybe a stray Shetland pony somewhere.
There's a lot of rich people out there with a lot of power, and they think the horses are very cute with their big eyes, and they helped build this country. I mean, I get it, but
oxen did, and
so we eat oxen too. Well, I mean, come on, we're missing out on a lot of meat.
Yes, and from what I've heard, it's really good. Have you had it before?
Yes. Well, no, I've never. I mean, I would never leave the country on purpose, but. From what I've heard, it's delicious. I've done a ton of research on this subject. And up until, I believe it was 1975, when it was actually became illegal. If you go back and look through this country's history, there were a number of times when people were consuming horse without any issue. It was less cost per pound than the beef product. And then there were definite periods of time when you can go back and read that people actually preferred the taste. My brother's been over to Germany. He's eaten it there. Matt Pittman was on my show a week ago, and I forget where he was. He ate it and didn't know what it was, said it was like one of the best things he's ever eaten, and then his buddies told him that was horse meat. And he's like, wow, this is even better now that I know what it was. It was like
I've
totally
only heard good things. I've heard like,
yes, it's lean. It might be a little more irony in taste. I hear irony. I don't even know what that means.
Just like liver, like, almost. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. But you know, when it's cooked, it looks kind of like regular meat.
It does. Just looks like lean meat.
Yeah. So does a plant-based burger, by the way. It looks like a grilled hamburger.
That should be banned.
I like it. I'm a big proponent of the Impossible Burger. Believe it or not.
It is. No. At what point did you start getting sponsors? And I want to jump to that. Then I also want to talk about a little bit about barbecue joints, if there's anywhere in your area or places that you love.
I had sponsors for the live show right off the bat because I had went out during the podcast and was soliciting sponsorship, saying, hey, you know, would you give me a couple bucks a month and I'll put your, we'll come up with some kind of read. I was contracting a guy that was on my forum at the time who was a real radio DJ in Myrtle Beach and said, hey, can you do these reads for me? And it'll be a 30-second one here and a 30-second one in the front and then in the back of the shows. And that's kind of where I started the whole deal, because remember, I was sales guy during the day anyway, so it was pretty easy for me to go sell my show because I believed in it.
Yeah.
And then when I transitioned into the live show, I got it up and running, felt pretty good about it, and then went back and said, hey, so-and-so, this is my show, this is what I'm doing, this is the amount I want to charge you, and blah, 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 and this is what you get. And that's kind of how it evolved. So, I mean, pretty basic sales stuff, pretty common on what you would hear on a normal radio. I get live reads and they take place in segments. I mean, the goal of the show initially was to have it sound and feel and look and act just like a radio show. So if anybody ever heard it on internet and said, hey, that guy could be on regular radio, it could easily be transitioned up into that terrestrial space. I was meeting time clocks. I could get out on time. I was doing all that stuff that a regular radio show would do, except that I was on the internet. And then that never really panned out. I don't really have a desire to be on regular radio at this point anymore. I think I'm hitting the niche well, and doing the live show enables me to continue to do this show. I firmly believe at this point, with all the other stuff that have going on, if I wasn't committed to do this show 9 to 11 and get the finished product out, I would figure out a way to never do it again. And that would be a travesty to me, but
all of us. Yeah.
To be honest to myself, I mean, I think I would figure out a way to not want to do it if I wasn't kind of under the pressure of doing a live show from 9 to 11 every Tuesday.
But it also, too, gives people something to look forward to or know because of your schedule and because of what you do. I think people know that, like, it just keeps you in the loop, and mentally people know that there's that Barbecue Central show out there and it's still going and it's getting new guests and the guests are strong and it's like you said, that the transition from the competition to what you're doing now, I think I don't want to disparage the old episodes, but you're really, really relevant now, and it's great. I love that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And so barbecue joints, do you go to barbecue joints? Do you get a chance to travel much? I know you went to Texas for the NBBQ. Is that?
Yeah, I went to the National Barbecue and Grilling Association's annual conference that was in Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that wasn't like party time for me. That was like work time. So We flew in, did some sound check. I figured out a way to kind of do my show in the sound quality. I've never done my show live on remote anywhere because I've never believed that I could have studio quality sound without being in my studio. And I never wanted to generate a product out to my listeners that sounded like crap, especially if I knew it was going to sound like crap. And I found this technology that allowed me to sound as good as I was going to sound, almost as good as I was going to sound in the studio. And it was a pretty easy package to carry, a couple microphones, laptop computer, blah, 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 and tested it out, sounded good. And then I think I showed up on a Wednesday. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I did live shows from NBBQA, 3 hours at a clip.
Yeah, they're great.
As soon as the show was over, I'd get my reporter microphone and I would go out into the public there and start getting sound bites and interviews with some people that I couldn't book for the live shows during those 3 days I was there. And then I'd go back to the hotel room and then it was editing audio. So, you know, I was up at 6 a.m. preparing for the 3 hour day and then doing the show, getting more audio and then editing until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and then doing it again 4 hours later. So, I mean, it was a great time. I got to see a lot of people. I got to meet some sponsors that I hadn't met in person yet. see some people that I hadn't seen in a number of years. So, yeah, I mean, sounds great to be there, but, you know, there was work being put in at the same time. But I don't travel otherwise, you know, really from a barbecue perspective. I was in Kansas City last year, but that was via volleyball, and had some really good barbecue at Slaps, Plowboys, had a really great steak at this place called Anton's Steak Shop, which is like top three steak that I've had so far in my life.
Oh, wow.
And then Cleveland, look, it's not the barbecue mecca of anywhere. And there are a lot of barbecue titled restaurants here.
Have you been to his restaurant?
Simon's?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the three that I'll recommend.
Okay.
And it's, you know, there's just a lot of crap here and nobody knows what's good. And they all think if it's bathed in sauce and it's falling off the bone. And I would venture to say that more than 75% of the barbecue restaurants that are in Cleveland are actually baking their shit in ovens and not actually having a smoker.
Jesus.
Which is offensive to me. And by the way. But a lot of people can't. And they just think, hey, it's in vogue. Everybody's doing it. This is so good. But of the three, if you come to Cleveland, you need to go on the either far west side or far east side. There's a place called the Proper Pig, which I always highly recommend. Mabel's Barbecue, which is exactly right downtown on East 4th Street. By the way, if you like fine dining, you can have Mabel's Barbecue on East 4th and then go right next door to Michael Simon's fine dining restaurant, Lola, if you're into, you know, doing a whole situation there. And then the near west side, there's a place called Barbecue Smokehouse. And to me, that's number one in the city right now. The guy that's cooking out there knows exactly what he's doing. He's got a fine dining background. I've actually had him on the show maybe a year or so ago when they were just kind of starting out. They had like 6 or 8 months underneath their belt. The brisket is on point. The chicken is great. The menu is simple. They're not trying to do 50 different things. What they do really. The greens are incredible. The macaroni and cheese wants to make your head blow off. It's so good. It is just, it's the place, but they sell out. You know, like they're doing what Texas does in Cleveland. So if you're not there by 3 o'clock in the afternoon after they open for lunch, the brisket's gone. The pulled pork is typically gone. Most of the ribs are gone. People in the beginning were like, oh, you need to make more. And
yeah, just like LA. Yeah.
They were like, hey, man, we know how much we need to make. We're not going to sacrifice quality for quantity. And this is just the way we're going to do it. So either show up during the times when you know you can get it, or you're going to get what's left. And I certainly appreciate that. It doesn't hurt that it's only like 10 minutes away from my office.
In
the office. I mean, that's so good. But those are the only three places I will recommend here in Cleveland. So, and if you ever have any questions, you know, just hit me up. There's a lot of other great culinary places to hit aside from barbecue in Cleveland. A lot of history, a lot of European influence over here. So great place to eat and a great place to hang, by the way. I'm sick and tired.
I've heard great things about Cleveland. I don't know why people are – I've heard like people say don't go to Cleveland. I don't know why they would say that because I've heard great things.
Man, got a lot of cool stuff happening. The city's safe. It's close. I'm here. It's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame city, barbecue capital of the North Coast.
Excellent. Well, I'm doing these barbecue city guides, and I might splice that out for Cleveland if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, that's because people travel. They have a day or 2 days in a specific city, and they might not know where to go. And those right there, those three recommendations are fantastic. So I appreciate that. Are there any steakhouses or places for prime rib that I could jump in?
Yeah, right there on the corner of East 4th and Prospect, there's a place called Red the Steakhouse, which is routinely voted one of the best independent steakhouses in the country every single year.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. So good. And then there's the chain, you know, Prime, like Morton's and some of those. But if you're going to come here for steak, you know, or you're here and you want great steak, Red is the place to go.
Okay, I'll tell them to go to Red. Well, thank you so much. Did I miss anything? Is there anything you want? Are there any shout-outs to anybody you want to give or... Yeah, you know, how would you like to wrap it up so people know exactly what you do? And
I want to say visit my website, thebbqcentralshow.com. That's like the main clearinghouse for everything that has to do with the show. You tune in Tuesday nights for a live show from 9 to 11. You could subscribe podcast on any platform, no matter what. You can get video archives on Facebook Live, on YouTube, and on my website as well. And I do want to thank John Solberg, which is the guy that puts together my best moments of the Barbecue Central show in 10 minutes or less every week. I do want to thank Steve Ray, Tennessee embedded correspondent, David Huff, Oklahoma embedded correspondent, and my longest running embedded correspondent, the guy who I love dearly, second only to you, Kevin, is Doug Scheiding, the Texas embedded correspondent and head pitmaster of Rogue Cookers. Those are kind of like the inner circle. Oh, also Stover Harger from you maybe would have known him from Best Barbecue Show podcast, but he's now part of the Barbecue Central Show Army. So
he's out in Oregon now. See,
yeah, out in Oregon now, Pacific Northwest, trying to figure out barbecue out there and all that good stuff. So those are kind of like the inner circle of people that really help me. They'll send me ideas, and I mean, it's not only just me. I mean, I do have some feedback and some idea people and helping me generate some content and stuff like that. So those guys really mean a lot to me, and they've done a lot of work behind the scenes that a lot of people probably don't see, or they'll submit ideas that I just don't get to, or whatever the case is, like when you have a show. So I just wanted to mention those guys specifically, but you know, just Google my name and find me and then like me.
I'll put a ton of links. There's far too many for you, but there's a wealth of them actually. But thank you so much for everything you're doing. I really appreciate it. And thanks for getting this sorted out so that we can do this, because I've been meaning to talk to you for a long time, and I love what you do.
Kevin, I couldn't appreciate this anymore. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks. Have a great evening.